Episode 146.
A lot of responsibility falls on the tech themselves to sort through the good, the bad, taking the good from different sources and putting it together, asking a lot of questions, seeking out the answers, doing a lot of legwork, networking with knowledgeable technicians.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hello, aftermarketers throughout North America. Carm Capriato here, and welcome to Remarkable Results Radio and episode 146 with technician Matt Fanslow. This episode is brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts with brands like Moog, Felpro, Wagner Brake, Champion, Seal Power, FP Diesel, and more. They're the parts tech trust. Find out more at fmmotorparts.com. Hey, now, I've been gearing up to include technicians into the interview mix. Now, today is the day that it officially starts, an episode dedicated to one technician's perspectives on the industry and their role in it. In this inaugural episode, meet Matt Fanslow, who works at Riverside Automotive in Red Wing, Minnesota. Now, you've heard Matt before on the podcast in episode 122, and that was our roundtable discussion, duly named the ASE Test Uncovered. Matt has worked with ASE for some time as a subject matter expert, and he's also done case studies for Standard Motor Products. Matt Fanslow is the diagnostic tech shop manager at Riverside and has an opinion or view of just about anything to do with automotive repair and diagnostics. Hear an honest and raw interview that covers craftsmanship, a tech's personal commitment to training, recruiting technicians into the industry, grounds and sensors, real-world training applications, and specialization. We covered a lot of ground, so put on your seatbelt and enjoy a candid conversation with A-Tech Matt Fanslow. See the show notes page, remarkableresults.biz/E146, for more on Matt. Now, here we go. It's nice to be with Matt Fanslow from Riverside Automotive in Red Wing, Minnesota. Hey, Matt, are you ready to go on point?
As ready as I will ever be.
You were on with me on that ASE behind the scenes as a subject matter expert with Dan and Ryan. And boy, that was such a great listen to episode. I loved what you had to say, so I wanted to invite you back. And thanks for coming on. And from a tech's perspective, because you're a diagnostic technician, I mean, you're up at there. I call you a one percenter. Would you agree with that?
It's hard to agree with that, but I do agree with it. I don't say that out of arrogance, actually. I don't really think of myself as being, quote-unquote, that good. Mm-hmm. I just think the level that the average tech is right now, at least from a diagnostic standpoint, maybe isn't where we would like it to be. For many reasons. Many, many reasons.
You don't think it's where it should be. And is there a problem with getting our technicians to that level?
I think we have a bunch of things that kind of go against it.
Like what?
I think we have a difficult time recruiting the type of individuals that would be very good at that sort of work to our industry.
So you're really into this whole automotive science thing. You know, I ask people automotive science, automotive service. You would probably say automotive science, right?
There's a lot of science to it, yeah. I mean, physics, psychology, there's a lot going on.
And recruiting the right people, is it the training in electrical? Is it the training in diagnostics? Or is it that they just want to get it and so they jump in and they learn it? What are you saying?
We have training issues. I mean, there is a lot of, lack of a better term, there is a lot of BS out there. There's a lot of bad training. There's a lot of really, really, really good training out there. A lot of responsibility falls on the tech themselves to sort through the good, the bad, taking the good from different sources and putting it together, asking a lot of questions, seeking out the answers, doing a lot of legwork, networking with knowledgeable technicians, maybe forming groups, friends groups with these individuals and learning together. So there's a lot of personal investment, a lot of time, a lot of money tied up in, and then being able to apply that to actually fixing a car. It's one thing to be able to describe how something works at a very engineering level, and then going to a car and being able to apply that in such a way that allows you to diagnose it accurately and efficiently and also repair the vehicle. So there's a lot going on. Not everybody wants to put that kind of effort in, and not everybody is can afford to put that kind of effort in. We're not paid necessarily to do that. It's got to be a personal.
What you're saying is you want to manage your resume. You really want to manage your resume, and you want to actually look deep inside it and say, what's next? What do I have to improve myself in? And then seek out that training, then take that knowledge and jump inside of a problem that you see in a vehicle, pull on that training, and learn from it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And so it may not be jumping into Google and typing in a problem or a code. Are you suggesting that you may want to fight through it and make those initial struggles that you have tough through it so that you learn from it?
Oh, yeah. Google's, you know, that's dangerous.
What do you mean?
Well, there's a lot of misinformation out there that is typed up and may make sense initially.
Okay.
But further digging through different avenues, different sources, you may find isn't exactly the truth.
Yeah.
And it's not limited to Google. We have a lot of information streams available to us.
I guess I'm saying Google is an overall concept, is that you know where to go to look for information. In fact, it happens to me. I know exactly where to go to look for it. I looked at it last time. I chose not to remember it because I chose to know, to remember where to go get the information. It's like addresses. I know I have to go to this building on this street, but I won't remember in my mind, you know, how to get there. I'll just remember how to find out.
Absolutely. There's actually, there are studies on that exact thing that you're talking about, that years and years ago, we memorized phone numbers, addresses, facts. That, you know, now with the internet, with the cell phones, with the laptops and the tablets and the quick access to the web, we don't memorize that stuff anymore. Certainly with cell phones, we don't memorize phone numbers anymore.
No.
You know, they're in there with a name. I want to call Carm, scroll through to C's, there's Carm, boom, it's dialing you. I don't remember your number. Yeah. And so what we're finding is we don't store that information in our brains anymore, but we do store where we found it.
Got it. Okay, now, as a diagnostician, the guy who takes the tough problems, you're the man with the wires and the meters, right?
A few of them.
Does that apply to what you do, knowing where to go and not remembering?
It can. I think I'm pretty lucky. I have a pretty good memory. A lot of the really, really good techs I know have just amazing memories. But I don't think it hurts to not have a good memory if you remember where to put that stuff or where you store that information. A friend of mine is really, really good about creating a PowerPoint presentation for vehicles he works on, and takes a lot of pictures, copies links or actual service information and pastes it in that PowerPoint, labels it so that down the road he can find it. So if he brings in this, you know, whatever car with whatever problem, whatever code, he quicks looks to see if he has a PowerPoint on it, and then he shows, hey, you know what? 3 years ago, I had a similar issue. Hey, this is where this fuse block is, and this fuse that I need to test. He's saving a lot of time. He maybe invested a fair amount of time that first time, but the second time, he's saving a ton of time. He might have pertinent technical service bulletins. He might have notes he left himself. Hey, this wire color is wrong. It's actually this color, or this is a good spot to connect my lab scope. This is a good spot to connect my low amp current probe. All kinds of notes, all kinds of time savers, and he has, you know, probably in the numbers of the thousands right now of these presentations he makes for himself and stores that information there for quick retrieval.
Wow, how valuable for him.
extremely valuable. And before PowerPoint, he actually stored these files in a file cabinet.
Do you ever pick up the phone and say, hey, buddy, what about this?
I do. I try not to very often. I don't want to abuse the privilege, but I do.
I'm talking to Bud Houston, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Hey, Bud, what's the best thing about the Guru on the Go van?
Yeah, I think that the best thing about the van and the kind of the mission is it's twofold. One is ultimately to bring brand awareness of the Federal Mogul portfolio. But I think the way that we do that is we bring value to the technician, the shop owner. And how we do that is we bring technical content, we bring some updated material, and once they see that I care about their operation, their reputation, and their qualifications, one, they're built up, but two, they really, at that point, listen to what I have to say about the brands, and it's built, the relationship is built on a mutual benefit.
So you bring technical stuff, and you bring product-specific.
Yeah, me personally, I'm super technical background. So anytime I'm doing a lunch and learn or a van visit, training session, it's typically 90% technical, 10% product.
Any new Moog products that are getting good reviews?
Yeah, one that's recently released is the Dodge Ram 25 and 3500 complete steering assembly. It's inner and outer tie rod ends and drag link pre-assembled. This is the first aftermarket part that's available in a complete assembly for this application. And the specific applications, late model Dodge Rams, are actually a kind of a high failure part on the chassis parts.
What about the compression-loaded ball joints with pre-installed integral dust boot?
Yeah, the integral dust boot has been a huge hit. Initially, the idea was well, where is the boot? And then once you kind of get around and show people, they're like, well, that is the best idea I've ever seen because I've torn so many boots on installation or I've had a boot that's not seated properly. And they're like, well, that's just not an issue now. And they love it.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the Gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. Okay, so if I say bad grounds or failing sensors to you as a diagnostic tech, is that some of your bread and butter? And is that easy or hard?
Unfortunately, I would say it is my bread and butter.
Got it.
That's kind of going back to that one percenter you're saying. Mm-hmm. You know, that if I put myself in this 1% or a group of friends in this 1%, a lot of times it's we're fixing these cars, fixing these issues, that it is a bad ground, it is a bad sensor, and, you know, arguably could have been found by another tech with the right training. Have they kept up on their training? Do they go to training and then go back to the shop and apply it? Because that's a huge, huge problem.
Right.
Is we go to a class, we sit there for 4 hours, 8 hours, or we go to 40 plus hours of training a year. But then we go back to the shop environment and we don't apply it. And one culprit to that, and it's not inherently bad. They saw a need and filled a need, but we have databases now.
Wait a minute. I just got this thought. You got to almost wait for that opportunity to come in so that you can apply what you learned. But now hold that thought. Yep. If you were a generalized bumper-to-bumper guy, you worked on exhaust, you worked on, you know, engine, you worked on brake, you would not have that, and you were a diagnostician, you would not have that opportunity as often as if you were purely a diagnostician like you. And do you see that almost specializing?
We're kind of seeing the industry make that go that direction in specialization. Either the shop itself is picking a few car lines and specializing.
Right.
And they have a group of technicians that are bumper to bumper, but they're on reduced number of car lines. Or they're a shop like mine, or the shop I should say I work for. We work on anything that comes in the door. However, I almost 99.9% of the time, I figure out what's wrong with the car. And then, you know, depending on what the repair is,
okay,
I may repair it.
Yeah.
I may bolt a sensor on. I may fix some wiring. But if it's, you know, an involved repair, it goes over to the other techs whose skill set are much, much stronger in the R&R type, remove and replace type, heavy line, and they take it apart and fix it and put it back together. And so in that fashion, like you're saying, I specialize. I have, you know, I might use multiple scan tools every day, lab scope often, meters often. They probably won't touch one. Maybe once a day they might grab a scan tool just to check codes and erase codes after a repair, reset, oil change reminder, maintenance reminder light.
Did you ever look in the mirror and say, man, I'm different? I mean, I love to do this.
And
I,
yeah.
And I get up, I'm juiced. Give me a DVOM. Did you ever?
Yeah, I've looked in the mirror and said I thought I was different many times. I mean, seriously, out of high school, I had no idea what I wanted to do. And there was a local technical college. They had an automotive program. One of the instructors came to my high school shop class, put on a bit of a presentation. And because of my background in my grandfather owning a farm implement dealer, just that little bit of experience up there allowed me to answer a lot of his questions in the class. And he went back, or during his presentation, he went back to his office. He knew who my parents were. He called them right away and said, hey, you know what? Matt has this bright future in auto repair waiting for him. And so I got home from school and my mom's like, hey, you know what? I got a phone call today. I'm like, oh no. Thinking it was bad. And then I went up to the tech college, enrolled in the class, and I walked into the shop, and they had, at the time, it was an OTC Monitor 4000.
Oh, yeah.
Old scan tool.
That's a Smithsonian. That's in the Smithsonian.
Yeah. But, you know, I saw that, and that's like, whoa. I was hooked on that, and that's all I really cared about.
So you really were a computer geek dressed up as a technician, really.
Or
a technician dressed up as a computer geek. I don't know.
Maybe. I think even at a young age, I just want to know how it works. I want to figure out how it works. How is it supposed to work? Why isn't it working? So I think I got this fixer personality. I got this just desire to solve puzzles. That's the thing. I like to figure out why it's broken, why it doesn't work. It isn't necessarily just auto repair, but that does resonate with me.
Is craftsmanship a dying art?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Why?
I guess I don't wish I was older, but I wish I could speak 2 years ago. I wonder if profit margins for shops were different in the way that technicians had more time. There was less stress about turning and burning, turning those hours, working at a very high productivity, very high efficiency. That, you know, I don't want to say necessarily more laid back, but I guess that would be maybe a term where the shop owner made money, the technician made money, the client, the car owner didn't feel the pain or the sting of the bill as much. And granted, the cars were much, much less complex. You know, we didn't need multiple scan tools to work on multiple different car lines. But so, you know, a lot of things have changed, but it's the stress wasn't so much turn and burn and working at these high productivity levels. So because of that, we turn to databases, namely online databases.
Yeah.
That we punch in your make, model, or VIN number, pulls up that information. We punch in a code or a symptom, and now we have almost a statistical list of what's wrong with the car. And now, kind of tying in what we've been talking about and dancing around this entire conversation is, you know, maybe at first you're going to look at this and say, oh, you know what, this car, it's doing this, it's got this code. Wow, there's a lot of hits for a mass airflow sensor. I'm going to go test the mass airflow sensor. Well, after you succeed with that a few times, stop testing the mass airflow sensor, because you're getting paid X amount of time to do this analysis, call the part, replace the part.
Yeah.
Well, it just makes financial sense to, you know, take this database at its word, because it's proven to be very accurate in the past. Bolt on the sensor, away you go. You didn't test it. And now maybe that skill set starts to atrophy. And now that car comes in where now you've been on the list and the car is still broke. And where was that lab scope? How does that work? You know, software's out of date. How do I update it?
Your methodology is not that. It's completely, if you will, can I say raw right from the beginning?
Yeah, and it's probably maybe out of arrogance rather than good sense. But I do think that you know, there's something to be said about test, that when you do go to these databases and, you know, I see it from multiple perspectives that as a shop owner, as a technician, it makes sense, especially to save time. And that's what it is, right? It's all about time. Get an idea of what's wrong.
Matt, how many times as you chat with your friends in the industry, are they wrong? What's the percentage that they do the map sensor and it really doesn't solve the problem?
Because they've gone through a diagnostic routine or because of the database?
Because of the database.
I'd hate to put a percentage on it, but I would say that the databases are pretty accurate.
Okay. So there's a great chance, 80% chance that they got it knocked on their first shot.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And from another perspective, if you think about this, Carm, as a shop owner, you want to send, maybe you start out, you want to send your technicians to a lot of training, or you want to get that A tech, that really, really good diagnostic tech. You want to bring them in, but you're going to have to pay them, and you're going to have to buy a lot of equipment. You're going to have to pay for a lot of subscriptions.
Yeah.
And the shop down the street doesn't. And they subscribe to a couple of online databases, and now that car comes in to that shop. They don't have the proper equipment to really be working on this car, but because they can copy and paste the VIN number into this database and punch in the code or the symptom that this car is displaying, they succeed in fixing the car at a fraction of the cost of your shop where you've invested in that technician and the proper tooling. Does the shop down the street always succeed? No. They may run into issues where they absolutely needed the equipment to finish the repair or to diagnose it properly, to, you know, regardless. But they're in the game because of that. And it hurts the shop that does the investment.
Let's call that mainstream. That's what's going on mainstream. You're not saying that the databases are valuable, right? They're there and they serve a great purpose, right?
Yeah, I think they initially came out with a very good reason. You know, you're in a jam. You just run into this car. It's kind of kicking your tail. Maybe it's the first time you've seen a system like this. You know, you've never seen direct injection before. You went to a couple classes about it, but this is the first car in your bay. You got your books out. You're trying to follow trouble trees. You're trying to follow the presentation of how to go about fixing this car. And either you're coming up empty or you're not confident. So it started out with maybe calling a tech line. It's evolved into an online database. You turn to it. Maybe it supports where you're going. Maybe it takes you in a completely different direction. But fundamentally, I think they were provided to us with, you know, nothing but good intentions. It's just like most stuff. Sometimes it steamrolls or snowballs, really, and becomes something else to where we're, you know, replacing training with it. We're replacing even technicians with it.
Okay. All right. You really got me here. My head's spinning with all the things that you're saying. Not that I haven't heard it before, and not that I don't think it's an issue that's discussed in our industry. But let me go back a minute. When you said an A-tech, a super A-tech versus, you know, say an A-minus. Now, the value of that A-tech to the shop, who's got that methodology like you, I'm just going to get up and get at it. In the long run, aren't you going to be a better revenue producer? Isn't the shop going to have a greater level of customer satisfaction? Or are you saying, God help it, that the A-plus super master techs are going to be a dying breed?
They may be a dying breed, but I don't think it's quite that dark. I do think over time, that tech we're talking about, you know, and it's not just a tech, the you know, the A-level tech, but a tech who's really driven to get to the root cause of problems, to take that next step, to stay late after work, to get up early, to test known good cars, to build up a database of good, whether it's waveforms, data, scan data, operational characteristics, whatever. That A tech, I think if the shop has it, there's something that's very difficult to track, very difficult to attribute. And it, you know, it goes to all the everybody in the shop, but it's that reputation. You start building up a reputation of being that shop.
Yeah.
You know, you might be able to climb the ranks using relying heavily on that database, but when the shop down the street does have that A tech who does have access to tooling, information, they're going to start getting the cars that you couldn't. You know, the database can only take you so far. It might point you to a component, but now we bolt in this new component that's been, you know, it's from a new vendor. And I don't mean vendors like, you know, CarQuest or Advance. There's a software update. You can't do that with the database. You need to have the tooling. And I think that's a whole, that's another conversation with the tooling and the technician to use the tooling.
Yeah, you're right. So you may be able to find the root cause, figure out what's going on. But now, in many cases, these components have to have an update.
Yes.
And so the ATEC brings value. I mean, is it the equipment that brings value or the ATEC's capabilities and abilities?
It's both. It's both, but there's there's, you know what, there's a skill. There's skills involved in using those multiple tools. If I'm only working on a couple of car lines, I only have a couple of scan tools, and now my techs probably use them more often. They're familiar with them. If I'm working on just about everything that comes in the door, now there's a skill set to using these different scan tools, because we run into software conflicts. We run into Java conflicts, driver conflicts, especially if we're trying to use one PC with multiple tools.
Right, right.
And so we start running into issues like that. And then it's just the navigation of the tool itself. You know, navigating the Chrysler scan tool is not the same as the Ford or the BMW or the Volvo or the Toyota. It's all different. And imagine if you're a bumper-to-bumper tech working on anything that comes in the door, and you've just done, you know, like you were saying earlier, exhaust and then brakes, and now you bring in this drivability problem. It's like, oh, I got to find the right laptop with the right interface. Do I have to make a subscription? I have to get to the right website. Do I have to download an update for the software, get it connected? Now I got to navigate. Oh, how do I get to that part in here where I get to this module and I can graph this or actuate that? There is a certain skill set to that.
Okay, so I've had a lot of interviews lately of shop owners that really are specialists. That's what they do. German, Japanese. I've seen it. It's been such an interesting trend, and it's not on purpose. It's just that's just how the interviews fall. And now you bring this up. Is it a trend that you see where it's smart to single line?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of sense to it if you can specialize in a couple of car lines. And I don't mean literally two, but reduce the number of car lines you service, but increase the serviceability of those cars. That's good. It helps, I think, everybody. But you also have to have the concentration of cars, right?
Yeah.
You know, we just do not live in an area that would allow us to service just a few car lines. There's just not enough of them. So we service them all. And I think we do pretty good. We, you know, I'm not 100% on every car line, but I'm 100% on a couple or quite a few.
It seems like in the coastal cities, these guys can specialize and do really well. Hey, did you ever get your butt kicked on a car?
Absolutely.
Give me your number one memory here.
Wow.
It's those case studies that eventually, I watched some case studies and you're thinking, oh, it's this simple. And then they kept digging down and digging down and digging down. And it ends up becoming like the last thing on the tree chart.
The ones that really kill me aren't always, I mean, some of them are just weird problems. Some of them are, you find out the rest of the story after you figure it out. And then the client comes in and says, oh, yeah, well, you know, I backed it into the swimming pool. Oh. And then I parked it for 3 years.
Aren't you supposed to find that out up front? Oh, no, they're not. They're not willing to tell you. I see.
Right. Sometimes it's just a really bad misstep on my part, a bad assumption.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So it totally reminds me of going to the doctor for a checkup. And I don't care if it hurts here, Doc, and he's touching some other part of your body. And he's a little smarter than you are to figure out how it all works, right? And you're right. Those I think the greatest lesson to appreciate a diagnostician today is to really remember your visit to the doctor. You know, why is he squeezing my ankles? It's about my heart. Well, guess what? It's somehow connected, right?
There's that, and then in a way, I kind of think of us as veterinarians because you have all these different lines of animals, and they can't really tell you what's wrong with them. They, you know, there's symptoms, and then you got the owner telling you, it's like, oh, you know, it's just not the same. He's laying around a lot, or you know,
that's right. The person walks out with a turtle, and you're bringing in a Doberman.
Right, right. That's kind of the way it is. At least in my world, it seems that way. You know?
All right. So we're talking diagnosticians. We're talking, and what I think about is consumers just don't understand what it takes to do this kind of work today. You know, people. There's forums everywhere talking about how we can get people, you know, the customer to pay for diagnostic work. What is a tech's spin on that?
It's tough. I mean, what we're number three in the most mistrusted services. So we got that against us. There is so much they don't know. And some of it, they don't, you know, honestly, they don't care. They just want to drop their car off, tell you what's wrong with it. Have you call them in an hour? They don't know the cost of doing business. They don't know the investment in equipment and what it takes to run the shop. And as a technician, they don't understand the personal investment of time and personal investment in our financial investments in our equipment. I'm not really sure of any other trade or industry that requires so much financial investment on part of the employee. You know, I have a bunch of friends who are electricians and plumbers. They really don't spend any of their money on the tools to do the job that they're hired to do.
Wow, that was the question of the week that I had out there for the Facebook tribe. And there was so much banter and chatter on that. And like it is on every forum out there. Let me go back to the diagnostic thing. And you bring up a great point. Maybe you and I should talk about it again sometime.
But that would be great.
It goes back to, all right, so think about it. In 20 years, people are going to have to appreciate what diagnostic time is all about. Because the car's going to be even more complicated, that you know, more high tech than it is today. And you bring up such a great point about the plumbers. You know, the plumbers charge more per hour. They drive around in a van with $25,000 worth of tools, not $100,000 worth of tools. And no one questions a $150 an hour plumber or electrician, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But yet, you come in because the plumbers don't have the signs up that says, we'll check your pipes for $39.95.
That is one painful reality, right?
Yeah.
You know, oil changes are great to pick on. How long does it take to do it right? You had somebody on earlier, a few episodes ago, who was talking about how he does not do oil changes. He does services that include changing the engine oil and filter, and he might be onto something.
Yeah, I know. You know, you bring up a great point. There's so much to learn from the episodes. There's so much to learn for these individual entrepreneurs. There's so much to learn from business coaches and the technicians. And I don't know where the time went, but I was absorbed into what you were saying. You know, maybe every quarter you got to come back and we just got to have this like little, you know, technician corner with Matt Fanslaw. What do you think?
I would be definitely game for that.
Wow.
You probably got to pull the reins on me a little bit, too.
All right, okay.
Keep me focused.
So we'll ask our listeners, you know, what do you want to ask, Matt? And I'll just read them. I'll read them off the paper, and we'll just say, Matt, you got five questions to answer. That's it. Anyway, thank you so much. Anyone can go out there and enjoy Matt's episode when he was with Ryan Koyman and Dan Bumgard from ASE. It was called ASE Test Uncovered, episode 122. It was a lot of fun. And you go into some cool stuff then, too. And let's bring this thing to an end and tell me some great words to live by.
One thing before we go, I would like to toss out is there's a couple people that are very important to me that I want to give a shout out to.
Sure.
They're not doing so well health-wise, but I want them to know that I'm thinking about them.
Okay.
That's David DeCourcy and Richard Boyd.
Sure.
So just to let you guys know, I'm thinking about you a lot. Words to live by. You know, I listen to a lot of your podcasts, and that question gets asked, and they usually have really good answers. Except when I think about it, I always think of the opposite, you know, the response to that, you know, find a job that you love to do, never work a day in your life. But that isn't always true, that we can find a job we love, that there's nothing wrong with working at a job that you don't much like to afford to do the stuff you do like. That's one that, you know, tugs at me. Wow. You know, I guess to me, something I think I've learned from my parents is to, when you're setting up your goals and whatever it is, you know, in life, as a parent, as an auto repair technician, find role models. Find people that do stuff the way you want to be able to do it. Whether, you know, like I said, it could be just being a human being. Find role models. Follow them. Try to get to know them if you can. And maybe even befriend them. I'm lucky. I have a lot of role models that I've met through this industry, and I get to call them my friends. But I really do try to take in a lot of things from them, both how to go about diagnosing a car, but also how to live life and how to be a better person. So I think that would be my advice, is to find yourself some good role models and pattern yourself after them.
Great advice. Thanks, man.
Well, thank you.
Hey, aftermarketers, thanks so much for listening right to the very end. For more on Matt Fanslow, don't miss the show notes for this episode at remarkableresults.biz/E146. Now, any questions or comments, email me at carm@remarkableresults.biz, or just head over to the contact page on the website. You'll see a form. You are an important reason I bring you these interviews, so you can profit from the ideas, concepts, and answers found in each episode. So help spread the word via social or email. Now do social with me at remarkableresults.biz/social. I always ask for your help to share the wisdom and grow the podcast as a powerful industry resource. And thanks for that. I'm really grateful for your support. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.